We are proud to partner with MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Students can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, wind time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and so much more. Even my favorite, synergy time. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. This B Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. IXL's all-inclusive online teaching and learning platform simplifies edtech needs and accelerates achievement in 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K-12 curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable, real-time insights at every level of your school or district. This one solution performs work that typically requires dozens of tools. Want to find out why so many leading districts trust IXL? Visit IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE. Welcome to Transformative Principle, where I help you stop putting out fires and start leading. I'm your host, Jethro Jones. You can follow me on Twitter at Jethro Jones. Welcome to Transformative Principle. I am excited to have Tiffany Coette on the program today. She was an administrator for 18 years in urban and suburban environments, elementary and high school, and now she's been at CAS, which is the Connecticut Association for Schools, for the last year and a half. That CAS organization represents about 1,000 schools in the state of Connecticut. She's a strong advocate for equity and access in education. She believes all students, regardless of their background, deserve a chance to succeed. She's committed to creating a school environment where all students feel safe, supported, and challenged. And she likes kids to be able to play. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Tiffany, welcome to Transformative Principle.
Thank you.
So, what's your big takeaway from the podcast today? Why should people listen?
I think that we all struggle with executive functioning skills. And as adults, we can struggle, kids struggle, and play-based learning in Connecticut, we have found, is a way to address those at the early grades in a way that is meaningful and has an impact on students. And it can be done very small doses. And so it's something that can be manageable within a classroom and scaffolding that learning for kids.
Oh, man, that is awesome. My big takeaway was what we said at the very end. So listen to the very end for that last little bit, because it is perhaps the most powerful thing. And it has to do with how much time is required to play as part of this legislation. So very exciting. We'll get to my interview with Tiffany here in just a moment. If you've been listening to Transformative Principle for any amount of time, you know that I have a love-hate relationship with EdTech. We have the ability to personalize learning for every single one of our students, and yet so many of our EdTech tools fall short. We need our technology to do more for us. That's why it's so important for me to know that IXL provides true personalized learning across the entire pre-K-12 curriculum, and that it's proven to benefit all student populations, including English language learners and students in special ed programs. As a principal, I've used this in my school. As a parent, I've had my children use it as well. And let me tell you, this is a tool that definitely helps students learn and practice better. IXL is research proven to accelerate achievement. Studies across 45 states show that IXL schools outperform non-IXL schools on state assessments, and independent research from Johns Hopkins University verifies that IXL meets ESSA Tier 1 standards. With those results combined with IXL's teacher-friendly reputation, what more could you ask for? Now, you also know that I don't care so much about test scores, but I know that they are legislatively convenient and something that we have to deal with and manage on a day-to-day basis. If you can implement something that is easy and effective, why wouldn't you do it? If you have a goal to increase achievement for all students, make sure to find out what IXL can do for you. Visit IXL.com/B for a demo. That's IXL.com/BE. All right, Tiffany. So one of the things that I'm super interested in is that Connecticut is right, one of the first ones in the country to say play-based learning actually matters. So tell us about what that legislation looks like in Connecticut and what that actually means on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. So last year I started at Connecticut Association of Schools, and I happened to be at a conference in the fall, and I was speaking with the policy person for CEA, which is the Connecticut Educators Association. And we were just talking about topics that we each were working on. Also CAS for building leaders and CEA for what they were working on for their teachers. And he happened to mention play-based learning. And that is something that when I came to CAS, I heard was a priority. And so I was connected to several people from the teachers union, CEA, at the state level. And they had a lobbyist who had written proposed language already and had kind of floated that over to the education committee. And then it was kind of just stagnating. There was a push for a lot of legislation around school-based issues last year.
Could you help me understand what that partnership looked like as you were working with other organizations and how you actually got this to be a law? Because we talk about advocacy a lot, but it's pretty difficult to make it an actual law.
So I partnered with them, reached out to the superintendent's organization, CAPS. I sent an email to CABE, which is our Board of Ed state organization, CONCASE, which is a special ed organization, CAIAC, which is early elementary, and brought all of these organizations to the table to discuss how we could work together to get this passed. It was something that is timely. We know, especially coming out of the pandemic, we have more and more kids who are dysregulated. We know executive functioning skills are suffering. And so bringing everybody around the table, we actually were able to work on the proposed language that CEA had already written and kind of wordsmith what we all could agree on. And so once we did that, it went into the education committee. There were a few changes as it moved to a proposed bill, and then eventually passed. And so we have this new legislation in Connecticut that says that beginning July of this year, all pre-K and kindergarten classrooms should be utilizing play-based learning during their day. And it also states that first through fifth grade teachers cannot be penalized by the district or Board of Ed for using play-based learning within their classrooms. So it gives teachers in the upper grades of elementary the autonomy to go ahead and use it as well. So exciting for kindergarten teachers. And I'll go back to kind of just when I was a building principal for a K through five, there were several times where I had kindergarten teachers come to me and say, what we're doing isn't right for kids. We're not meeting their needs. We need to incorporate more play. I kick myself now because looking back, I was more of an intermediate teacher and I kept saying, okay, tell me how to do that. I know it's not bringing back the water and the sand table, but what does that look like in terms of what we have for curriculum? And so I didn't have the resources that I needed to be able to do that. The teachers didn't really know where to start to do that. And so something like this, I think, would have forced the district, and it'll force some districts to really look at places where play can be incorporated better into the daily practices within those early childhood grades.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about what that means to be play-based. I mean, you're saying it's not bringing back the sand table, but it's going to incorporate more play. How is that interpreted in the bill, and how is that explained in the bill as well.
So the bill actually breaks down what play looks like in several different realms. So there's free play, kids are playing freely. There's play-based learning. There's different types of play. And really what we're talking about is play that is facilitated by the teacher so that there's conversation happening and kids are being challenged about their thinking, challenged about their assumptions. We're applying real-world principles and real-world applications, creating opportunities for kids to problem solve, to think critically. So instead of saying, okay, I'm going to give this child a bin of blocks and they're going to go stack a blocks as high as they can in the corner of the room, it might be that we are talking about they have a zoo and they have to create an enclosure for their zebras. And how many zebras can you put into this one area? And so making it something that's applicable and interesting to them, and then tying it into what other students are doing. So it's not just about one student. It might be looking at more of a whole class approach. So, you know, think themed learning, not putting apples on everything in the fall and saying that we're learning about apples, but instead something like in Connecticut, we have fall fairs, fall carnivals. So we might be saying, okay, our class is going to have a fall fair and each student is going to create a ride. What are you going to use for materials to create your ride? How are you going to sell tickets? Using mathematical principles to teach the kids how to, you know, one-to-one correspondence with the tickets. How many tickets are you going to use or require for each ride? And creating opportunities for learning for students that is challenging, but also is interesting. I think too often we have kids sitting for 20, 30, 40 minutes when they're just little guys, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you make it so that play doesn't now become not playful and boring because we're trying to academize it? How do you prevent that?
That's a great question. We are working with districts to try to create, actually, let me rephrase that. We're working with districts to try to show what it can look like. There's so many different ways that play-based learning can be incorporated into classrooms. And so we've created several workshops at CAS where we are inviting principals and lead teachers and teachers to come in and see snippets of what it can look like. And then we also are offering up site visits. We did that last year. We're doing it again this year so that we can take people to see it in action and they can really see the energy in the room and feel it when kids are learning. I think you can, when you fall flat on the play-based learning principles and it becomes more just academic tasks, you can feel that in the classroom. Yeah. You know, we always say when kids are learning, it's messy. It's not quiet. They're talking, they're up and around. And so to keep that energy and to really build on that excitement with kids is important to their learning. And as a former elementary principal, I mean, I always felt that my goal, one of my biggest goals, was that kids leave fifth grade loving school. Because if you haven't got them in elementary, you've missed a really big opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And boy, being a mostly middle school principal through my career, I have seen those kids come in and just know that we're fighting an uphill battle to keep them. And there are some who know by the time they get to middle school that this whole school thing's not for me.
Yeah.
And that is a real tragedy, because what I keep referring back to is that every kid loves to learn, but not every kid loves school. And that's because we make school boring, rote, uninspiring, and we're just not meeting the things that are interesting to them. So I want to talk more about this play-based learning and how there's one of the things in the bill that I think is really interesting is that it says that it should not predominantly be using electronic devices, which, you know, play-based learning, like there are lots of games that you could quote unquote learn from, but it specifically puts that out, but it doesn't take it out completely. So there is still room for those types of opportunities, but it's not supposed to be the main thing. What insight do you have about that?
I mean, you know, coming out of the pandemic caused us to rethink everything about education. And it opened up a lot of new doors for us in terms of professional development for staff. We can now do webinars. We can more easily access information. But at the same time, electronics became a default for kids. We saw more and more kids become addicted to electronics. And we know that there are great opportunities with electronics for learning. But kids tend to get those quite a bit. And so we really want to emphasize with play-based learning that it is about building those thinking skills and the critical thinking. It's those executive functioning skills. Students learn how to have discourse and conflict through play-based learning. If I want to build my zebra enclosure one way and my partner wants to learn, you know, build it another way, then we're going to talk that out. And sometimes that's with teacher facilitation. Sometimes it is somebody, an adult, helping us through that. But in time, the kids learn how to do that independently. And so by taking away the default of electronic devices, we kind of force kids to have more personal interactions with each other.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. So let's talk about the professional development that you're going to provide around play-based learning. So the it's just a couple months out that it goes into effect, right? So what does that need to look like? And it's not just that, if I understood you correctly, like pre-K and K have to have it and first through fifth can have it, right?
Correct.
That's the correct term. So what does the PD need to look like before the next school year starts so that teachers are ready for this?
Yeah. We've started with some PD. We know that there are going to be schools that are just going to purchase a curriculum that has the play-based component within it. We're trying to really encourage districts to not do that, to use the resources that they have. I think play-based learning can be incorporated into most curriculum or curricula. It can be, if you think about how you're teaching a little differently, it doesn't have to be a large expense for districts. So we've had 5 workshops so far. We have 3 more coming up this spring that are 2.5-hour overviews. We have a couple of experts in the field who show video clips of what this looks like in a classroom. We do some hands-on with those teacher leaders and the principals and assistant principals who are there with us so that they can use some of the same materials, build and to learn during that session, so they get firsthand knowledge. We also have created a cohort. We have a learning cohort for administrators this year. So we had applications. We have 18 leaders who are engaging in a 6-day cohort opportunity that is funded. And a lot of our funding comes for play-based learning. A lot of our funding comes from the LEGO Foundation. So the LEGO is allowing us the opportunity, or LEGO Foundation is allowing us the opportunity to do this cohort learning. And we have a variety of schools in there, school leaders. We have people who have never engaged in it, and we have some of the experts who really are doing a great job with it within the state. So it's nice to be able to have those leaders come together and to network with each other. And then for our facilitators to walk through everything from fiscal implications to scheduling to, you know, which curriculum maybe can it work better with or more smoothly than others. And so we're able to break apart the 6 days into chunks and work with those leaders to really have in-depth learning about what play-based learning should be. Go ahead.
I just think it's really fascinating to think about this different change that you need to make that everybody, well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people probably said, this is what we need to be doing. And then when the rubber hits the road, it's like, okay, what does this actually look like? And so often, like, the adults need to play themselves, which, you know, you said a few minutes ago that giving them opportunities to experience that will be valuable as well. So when you're thinking about you're thinking about schools being able to do play with kids, how does this impact your professional development that you provide for administrators? That's not about this topic. But does this inspire you to bring more play into the work that you're doing on a day-to-day basis with school leaders? through CAS?
Oh, completely.
Yeah, talk about that.
Sure. I mean, we know we one-shot deals don't work well as far as professional development. We still do them. My colleague and I, Alicia, have tried to get away from a lot of our one-shot workshops. We do mm-hmm. like to have hands-on learning for people. You know, the topic doesn't always lend itself to that. So we have one-shot or one-stop workshops for a lot of legal webinars and those sorts of things. But the cohort model and what we've done with that play-based piece is really engaging for people. And so that's a way that we're starting to rethink professional development. How can we take topics and organize cohorts around it so that leaders are hands-on, working together, engaging in the work, not just hearing somebody tell you how to do it, but then working on it together. Mm. You know, and I think regardless of how many schools you have in your district or what that might look like in terms of colleagues around you, you always feel like you're an island. And so connecting people with colleagues who may share similar roles or similar leadership opportunities within their own district, but just builds those connections so that you have other people to reach out to. I think being a principal, being a teacher was probably the hardest job I've ever had. Being a principal was the loneliest.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is definitely the truth. And it's easy to feel that way because you really are by yourself in those leadership positions, because you can't always talk to people about what you're going through and can't always share that. So being able to have some opportunities to play and have a little bit of lightness, but then also having cohorts of people that understand where you're at and what you're going through could be really powerful as well. So with those cohort-based groups, what have you found is the best way to determine who's part of that cohort? Is it job alike? Is it interest alike? Or is it vision or mission aligned? What do you find works best?
I can't say that we've found, well, the play-based one is working really well, but outside of the play-based one, we're still playing with it. And I don't know that there is one model that's going to work for everybody. So now we're talking about doing some themed-based cohorting. We had a school, I attended something last summer where there was a middle school principal who held I think he called it the unconference, and he invited 15 colleagues, and they came around the table and they all, what do we want to talk about today? And they listed their 11 or 12 topics, and they went down through and spent the day talking and collaborating and networking about each of the topics. So that gave them point of reference for each colleague doing in their building and who can I reach out to. There's opportunity and times where a number of different configurations is beneficial. So that's what we're really trying to do at CAS, is to expand what those look like. People learn differently. Our leaders, everyone's day looks a little different. Everyone's learning style is a little bit different. So we change things up. We have things in the morning. We have things in the afternoon. We try to do in person, but we also allow for webinars. Connecticut's not big, but we also are not a state where we know each other. So trying to make some of those connections, you know, CAS represents about 1,000 schools, just over 1,000 schools in the state, which is small potatoes when you're talking about, you know, a state like California, but for New England, that's a lot. So trying to find ways to bring people together that's going to give everybody the opportunity to do that in a way that's comfortable for them, I think is our challenge.
Let's talk about flex time in schools. If you've been listening for a long time, you know how important I think this is. It gives us more time for personalized learning, increasing choice and agency for students, and the increased enrollment that comes with it, dedicated time for intervention and enrichment. And overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be so tough. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose. And with seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and an intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. Want to see for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more about it and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. There's some benefit to being small and having only 1,000 schools, but there's also a challenge to that as well. That how do you group people appropriately? And, you know, I like that you're saying that you're playing around with it and trying to figure out what works best, because I really think that's the way to do it and say, you know, where are we going to have success? So like when we did the artificial intelligence workshop, like that was a way to group people together and say, if you're interested in AI, then come to this event. And I feel like that brought the right group of people to be in that arena and to be able to play, which is really what we did that day, and figure some things out. And the real challenge is that sometimes that's more difficult to do when there's not as much direct, explicit instruction, and it's like, you know, try to figure things out and do some playing yourself. I think that's one of the real challenges that teachers face, is they like everything scripted, structured, and put in place. How do you help people loosen up and try something different?
Well, I think the AI workshop that you led was a perfect example of that, because I think people expected to come and have some explicit teaching, and you came with ideas and were able to facilitate for people and say, oh, you have this problem with practice. Well, why don't you try this? And then we got in and we got our hands dirty, and we worked on it sometimes together, sometimes individually, and we made it work for ourselves based on what our own learning styles were, what our own needs were. At that AI conference, there were people from schools. There were two or three people from some schools, and they worked on things together. And we want kids to do that, but we as adults don't do that. And so changing the way that we approach tasks and problems. Dog's gonna bark. Hold on 1 second.
It's all good.
So we put kids outside their comfort zone a lot. And we want that to be a learning experience for them. But as adults, we don't tend to go outside of our comfort zone very often. Yeah. And so how much can you really learn when you're staying in what's comfortable?
Yep, that is very true. We don't like to do that. So what would be your suggestion for helping someone get out of their comfort zone?
I think it's incremental. It's small amounts. And that starts with maybe just expanding your network, reaching out to people who, and making those connections with others who are in a similar role. You could work in a district with five other building principals, you know, if there's six elementary schools, but if all of you have the same skill sets, you're really not gaining any new knowledge. So finding places where they've overcome obstacles, finding people who have put some great things in place or who've been creative in their approach to leadership can make a huge difference. So, and I think for some people, those networks and making those connections is an uncomfortable place because it takes effort. And we know leaders are tapped out. They're tired. They're working long hours, longer than they should. For the most part, probably not balancing their life extremely well. And so to add one more thing on your plate seems like just a monumental task. Just making those connections can create a form of self-care because you have somebody else to reach out to.
Yeah, definitely. Boy, I think that's a good place to end it. My final question, just sum up everything that we've talked about. What is one thing that a principal can do in his or her school this week to be a transformative leader like you, Tiffany?
I think one of the best ways to become a transformational leader is to scale back. We try to do too much. We want to do everything really well. For the most part, we're probably all type A. So that's why we're in these roles. Mm-hmm. and we want to affect change right across the board. And sometimes that is stepping back and saying what one or two things are going to move the lever or move that needle. And how do we make change? When I'm coaching, I ask building principles quite often, if you had a magic wand, what is one thing you would change that will impact student learning in a meaningful way? What's the one thing that would impact it the most? And start there instead of trying to get everything done. Back up.
Yeah. Yep. I like that. The other thing I would add to that is, what's the one thing and what's the smallest one thing? Like, how small of a change can you make to make a big difference? So for example, you don't have to redo your whole entire school mission, vision, values. Like, you could just start living it. You know, that's just the one little thing. You could start tying your observations to it. That's a very little thing that you could do that will make a huge difference. And being able to think like that, like, what's the smallest thing I can do to actually make a real impact on what I'm trying to do? I think that's really powerful. Great advice.
I agree. And can I just add that when we started talking about the play-based learning legislation, we had a lot of discussions amongst the organizations about where do we want the emphasis to be? Do we want minutes, number of minutes that you're going to be required to do this every day? Is it going to be within the ELA block? Is it going to be within, you know, a certain portion of the day, a percentage? And we backed off and we said, knowing that it's happening is a good start. And so it speaks to kind of what I'm saying and what you're saying, like, what are those small pieces that you can put in place? Play-based learning can be a huge task, but it also can be really small. If teachers take it small, start small in places where they can manage it and then build it from there, it can make a huge impact in how we are reaching kids.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I'm glad you said that, because the thing that makes me think is, if you really focus that deeply and say, what do we really need? We just need them to do something. And it doesn't matter what. Like, if a kindergarten teacher starts doing 5 minutes of free play and 10 minutes of guided play, like, that would be great. But that also gives the flexibility to someone to say, you know what, I'm going to have kids do 2 hours of free play and have it be structured in such a way that it's manageable and I can do it. And I'm doing guided play with other small groups of kids throughout that 2 hours. And it doesn't turn into quote unquote wasted time, but turns into valuable, worthwhile time that is meaningful to everybody involved. Like, that's the beauty of not putting those restrictions on it. Like, how much time do they have to spend doing it? I think that's brilliant. Way to go. That's awesome.
Thanks. I think 30 minutes of purposeful play is going to be so much better than 3 hours of something that is just a mess and kids don't really understand the purpose behind it.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Well, good. Obviously, we could talk for a long time. So thank you very much for being part of Transformative Principle today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Do you want to simplify your school's technology, save teachers time, improve students' performance on state assessments? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/BE to learn how IXL's research-proven teaching and learning platform can help you achieve all these goals. That's IXL.com/BE. There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all of those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flexible time without all the headaches you get with it usually. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.